new singles at the end of today, so you can have that to look forward to. But you have your new album coming out. You've been working on some projects, I hear.
Yeah, lots of film work, which I'm very grateful for, and it's been fun kind of finding the balance between my film and TV stuff and my music, which is right now my passion. Not yet bringing an income from it, but hopefully one day.
Yeah, hopefully soon. Very talented, so I have no doubts that it will happen.
Oh, thank you.
So we'll just get right into it. Feel comfortable answering in whatever capacity you'd like. What is your disability, Rachel?
So I have cerebral palsy, diagnosed at birth. I was born 3 months premature, pound 12 when I was born. People love that fact because it really puts it in perspective.
Pound 12.
Yeah.
Gives you like pound, a visual. 12 ounce.
It's like a...
I like that you say pound 12, yeah. Not 1 pound 12 ounces. No, or like pound like, 12.
Figure it out. my mom always described it as like a tissue box. Like I was just a little tiny. Little tiny baby.
Little tissue box.
And then recently, a couple years ago, that wasn't enough. So I also got diagnosed with scoliosis on top of it.
Oh, geez. When it rains,
so
it pours.
So it's an interesting cocktail, for sure.
Yeah, that tends to be a thing, though, compounding disabilities. There's some science on that I have yet to research, but...
Yeah, and they love to say, like, especially with CP, they always say, it's not progressive. And I'm like, well, when you get it, and you get older... You tell me if it's not progressive.
That's something so interesting I always hear about, like, scientific research is, like, all these doctors will say one specific thing, and my knowledge is mostly in, like, female reproductive care, like, birth control and things like that. And they're always like, no, like, an IUD is completely safe. There will be no side effects whatsoever. I'm like, that may be the case for some bodies, but not all. And they just, like, refuse to acknowledge that. And I'm like, it's so clear. How can you not acknowledge that?
We're not cookie cutters.
Everybody's
a little bit
different.
No, nobody's
a cookie cutter. Even within the same disability, not everyone's a cookie cutter.
So true.
So you've got CP and scoliosis. How does that affect your day-to-day life?
It changes, and it has changed. I mean, I'm 28 now. I'm almost 30.
You look great.
Thank you. Thank you. I can only say I'm almost 30 for so much longer. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, when you're a kid, you spend so much time trying to figure out why you have this. And, like, why am I different? And what does this all mean? And... you get kind of wrapped up in that. And then now as an adult, you're just like, well, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I just have to move forward and build the best life I can with the tools I've been given. My mom was awesome as a kid because, you know, you, especially as a teenager, you get emotional and you think, oh, my God, like everything. The world is falling apart around me. And and I'd say, Mom, like, I hate the way I'm feeling. I'm so upset about all this. And my mom would go, well, these are the tools. You're an adult. You got to figure out how to use them. You have to, you know, what is this going to do to help you sitting around feeling sorry for yourself, you know? And I think my parents did a really good job when I was younger, just educating me on my disability and making sure that I knew my own limitations, but also, you know, propelling me forward in the sense that, like, they took note of my interests. They pushed me in those directions. And they never said, you can do anything anyone else can do. They were always honest with me. And they said, you can do whatever you set your mind to if you can find a way to adapt. You have to find a way to adapt. And you know, we'll help you and you'll figure it out. But, you know, you can adapt whatever you want to do to your body. And... I did. And you know, that has been my little mantra. Adaptability is the key to success for years.
I really like that. Adaptability is the key to success. Someone write that down. But I think that's such a refreshing take from a parent. You know, you can't do everything that everyone else can.
Because they didn't want to set me up for failure. They wanted to show me that there was another way and that I could kind of find my own interest. You know, obviously I'm not going to be a professional free climber, right? Like, I'm not going to be scaling mountains with cerebral palsy, but, you know, they never set limits on my dreams. They always just help me kind of, it's like, here's the path that some people will take over here, and here's an alternate route that maybe we could try. Like,
that's really beautiful, actually. I really like that. Sounds like you've got some really responsible parents.
I have the best family.
And yeah, was anybody, did anybody else in your family have a disability before you?
Actually, yeah, my aunt, who is coming into town tomorrow, she has polio.
Oh, I feel like that's such a response. Like, I'm like, wow, bare minimum. Yeah. What a responsible parent thing to do, to just like educate yourself before your kids have to educate themselves.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually not something I hear very often when I interview people with disabilities. They're kind of like, yeah, my parents were like there, but like I kind of just was floating in space until I started to figure things out in my teens. But it's really wonderful to hear that your parents like educated themselves and then pass on some knowledge and insight to you.
Oh yeah, no, my parents, we are, our family, like our myself, my mom, my dad, my sister, now my fiance, my grandma, like we're all very tight. But growing up, when it was just the four of us, like I can remember even before my sister was born, because we're 10 years apart, as a little kid, you know, my dad worked from home and he would, you know, stretch with me every day, braces on, Botox appointments. My mom, when I was really little, like, she was the one there with my dad. They both, you know, they were hands-on, and they still are. I'm 28, and they're probably listening right now, so hi, Mom and Dad, love you.
Hi.
But, you know, they're still my biggest fans, and I'm very lucky.
That's very sweet. That's very wonderful. So what does having CP entail for you, and scoliosis too?
So for me, I mean, CP is one of those really strange disabilities that has such a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fortunate that despite, you know, being told that I wasn't going to walk or talk or any of that, I'm very, you know, mild on the spectrum. So for me, it just means that I deal with chronic pain. I have a weird gait. Both my feet kind of turn in. I kind of limp. It's definitely, you know, visible. You can see it when I'm walking around. Scoliosis, it's not like at the point of like surgery or anything crazy, but it, you know, it just contributes to the chronic pain.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the main.
Yeah, scoliosis is not an easy one by any means.
No, and I mean, my scoliosis was like, you don't just get it. Like, I probably have had it my whole life, but now it's at the point where, like, okay, like a couple of years ago is when I figured out it was actually really there. Yeah. And it's from the muscles in my back pull my spine because of CP, like that tight muscle.
Mm-hmm.
They like to cause problems.
Okay, so that's kind of the daily symptoms are just chronic pain that varies from day to day.
Yeah.
And you have a gait, and but like you said, you found ways in life to adapt.
Yeah, you have to.
How has that affected you coming into finding a career in life? Like, were you, when you were thinking, what do I want to do in life, when you were a young lass?
Yeah.
When you were a wee lass, did you ever think about the everyday symptoms that you deal with that might affect your ability to pursue a career?
Not really. I mean, I had a dream. I had a goal. I wanted to be in the film industry from the time I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you have to remember that when you are born with something like this, chronic pain is kind of all I know.
Yeah.
So there is nothing to compare it to. Like, I don't know what it's like to take a step without pain. It's like, I describe it to people like white noise in the background, right? Sometimes that static is really loud and it's distracting. And sometimes it's just there in the background and you're living your life. So as a kid, all I wanted to do was work in film and TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I love music too. Like, I was always getting in trouble in high school for having my headphones on in class, like constantly getting my headphones taken away from me because I would disappear into my own world.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we're actually working in the film industry now. There has been some hurdles that I had to get over. Mainly the big one is that, and this isn't a malicious thing, it's just a fact, people don't care. So what I mean by that is, you might walk into a room and feel self-conscious because you're thinking that all these people are seeing is the fact that I'm limping on in here. And sure, that there is an element of that. Like, you know, you do get looks, especially being a woman in a male-dominated industry. That is still very much a thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's like, can you do the job? Great. Do it. And if you have questions, sure, but, like, can you do the job or not? So the hard part is that when you have a disability and you're working in these highly competitive industries, the hurdle becomes, well, okay, if I fail at this, if I mess up, well, they'll just hire somebody else that doesn't have a disability that can do exactly what I'm doing. So you get this sort of complex that you constantly have to prove yourself to mm-hmm. people. And then you realize that that's not great either, because you're setting a standard where you will constantly overwork.
Yeah.
Continually. Like, in any job, if you're an overachiever and you're going, yeah. you know, 100 miles a minute, does that mean you're going to get more raises? Does that mean you're going to get more, you know, credit or acclaim? Yeah. No. It just means that you're the one in the office till midnight every night. Who's suffering? It's you.
That's so interesting. I've never heard that perspective before from someone specifically with a disability about having, or someone like constantly feeling the need to prove yourself.
Oh, of course.
Have you ever been scared to like ask, I don't know if you ever have you ever asked for an accommodation from work?
Yes.
And did you ever feel like scared to ask for that?
Yeah, I would say nervous, because it's like,
yeah, you're worried about,
are they going to think I'm weak?
Yeah, which is right? such like a boo.
That's always, yeah. that's always, oh God, I need something. Like, great, they're going to think I can't do this. When in reality, all they're thinking about is, God, we really need this thing done. Do you have it? Okay, great. And then they're off doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And you have moments where like people will straight up ask you like, hey, what's wrong with your legs? And like,
wow, really?
Oh yeah. Huh. Yeah. And you have to decide, like, whether it's a professional setting, whether it's I'm out in the world, you kind of get to decide whether you want to educate.
Yeah.
Or throw in one of my go-to one-liners to kind of set the standard that's not where we're going today, you know?
And Rachel and I were talking about this a little bit before off air, just this, like, disability fatigue situation of, like, just constantly, like, one, if you are someone with a disability, it is sometimes exhausting to just exist.
Yeah.
Two, it's even more exhausting to constantly have to explain yourself and your existence to others.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when they do it in, like, non-sensitive ways.
I mean, at this point, I think after 28 years, that part is irrelevant. You're still asking the question. I'm still yeah. going to roll into the script I've had written for at least 22 of those years, like, yeah. elementary school age, explaining to my peers what's wrong with me, quote-unquote. But I think the hardest part about being disabled is also the grief of the life that could have been.
Oh.
Like, there's this element of, like, and yeah. usually it's in your teens, early 20s. Like, I'm getting yeah. out of this phase now. But every so often, it's like you think, oh, my God, what could I have done in my life if I didn't yeah. have to spend all this time managing this? Like, imagine, because I consider myself to be pretty good. I have a great life. I get to have an amazing creative career. Mm-hmm. I have the best family and friends there is. On average standards, my life is amazing. Right? Despite this disability. So I often think, like, huh, if I had that extra time not managing CP, not managing all this stuff that I carry around with me, what else could I have done? You know? And so that's kind of the hard part mentally. Yeah. Like, at this point, I'm well-versed in the chronic pain thing. I have my coping tools. I get it. Yes, some days it's like, ugh, this sucks. But you get over it. You wake up the next day and you continue on,
yeah.
right? And that's kind of the thing now, being almost 30, is like, all right, we don't have time for this. We got to move forward. We don't have time to dwell on all this stuff that's behind me back yeah. here, because that's not preparing me and propelling me forward for the future. That's sinking me into, like, this nasty, sad hole that,
yeah.
you know, is that gonna help me down the road? No, it's just making things worse. So you have to kind of, sometimes you got to be tough with yourself.
When you say sometimes, and I do agree with that mindset, but at some points I also think sometimes, you know, you have to give yourself grace to feel these feelings that come naturally. Do you ever have those moments where you're like, man, my, like,
oh yeah,
chronic
yeah.
disability is really freaking bugging me today, and I'm just gonna be sad about it for 10 minutes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's yeah. I think that's healthy, and I think that's a natural thing. I think I have a very like, unique view. So my relationship
with
my body is like, imagine not being able to trust your body at any given point.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm going to have a spasm. I don't know whether I'm going to be able to, like, you know, I have no trust. So the way I see things is kind of like a competition, right? I like to run. Running is a hobby of mine. I really enjoy it. That was my COVID activity. I ran 15K in 2020.
Jeez, I can't run 15K.
Before I found out I got scoliosis, then I had to stop, gained a bunch of weight. Now I'm kind of getting back into it, doing the sun run this year.
Oh my gosh.
So running was fun because, not because it's great exercise, it's great for your mental health, yes, all that aside, it was a way for me to compete with cerebral palsy. Because if I don't bother comparing myself to anybody else around me in the physical sense, because that's a losing battle, right? Yeah. My friends who are able-bodied, like, love them all to death. But, like, when it comes to sports or whatever, yeah, they're going to do better. It's facts, right? My dad always used to tell me, compete with yourself. There's no reason why you have to compete with anybody else. So when I run, it's like this weird mental thing where it's like, okay, if I can run a 5K today, then, you know, I've won this battle, right? I've won this. I did it. I beat the chronic pain. I beat whatever's going on in my body. I beat whatever's going on up here today, and I did the damn thing.
That is, wow. I really want to ask this question.
Go for it.
Before we go to ad break. And there's no right answer. This is a very philosophical question. I'm a philosophy major, by the way.
Oh, perfect. Great.
I really do take great issue with this idea that everything has a silver lining.
Mm-hmm.
I do really think some things can just suck.
Yeah.
Some things are just terrible. Some things have they add no positive value to your life. They just suck. But I do look at those things in my life that have just purely sucked. And I wonder, like, am I getting hung up over this? And am I just letting it beat me up when in reality, like, I could be moving forward with it. I could be, like, deflecting off of it and using it as a learning lesson. How do you think that kind of, like, do you look at your disability and think there are positive moments to having a disability? Or are you ever just like, this just sucks?
No, I think life is not black and white. If anything, if they've learned anything in 28 years on this earth, it's that there's two sides to every coin. Now, don't get it twisted. If somebody walked in this door right now and said, take this pill, you won't have CP anymore, I'd be like, give it to me now. Like, and I think there's this thing, and when I was younger, I used to say all the time, well, no, I think my CP is a gift. And it's like, yes, to your point, I think it has made me strong. It's made me resilient. It's made me stubborn as hell. And that's also negative because my friends and family sometimes are like, well, you got to slow down.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing too much. Like, this is, you know, it took me a few times to learn that I was pushing my own limits too far.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think that it's not, you know, one or the other. I think it's like, yes, CP has given me a lot of good. It's given me some bad. But I'll be damned if I had the chance to see what life is like without it, I'd do that too.
That is a really interesting take. We're going to go to ad break right now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Rachel's new album. BRB.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, incisive Chicago rapper Mick Jenkins, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Foe, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalists Witch, renowned soundscape composer Laurel Halo, British electronic producer Forest Swords, eminent post-punk three-piece Wombo, Philadelphia hardcore punk group Soul Glow, and many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
This is Kristen Carter. My debut contemporary pop album, Full Bloom, is now yours to discover. Full Bloom is a living garden of 12 songs that celebrates the beauty and the seasonal nature of life. You can find Full Bloom wherever you listen to music. Visit thekristencarter.com or follow at Kristen Carter Music for more. Funded by Factor and Canada's private radio broadcasters. I just wanna feel alive.
Hey everyone, welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, and I'm here today with special guest Rachel Ransom. And if you missed it, we actually talked a lot about some very interesting things. And if you missed it, you should go back and listen to the podcast, because I'm feeling a type of way about it.
More things might come up.
But right now I want to talk about your new album. So you have a new album coming out.
It
debuts tomorrow.
The next single debuts tomorrow.
When does the album come out?
May 10th.
Okay, that's very exciting. So it's called 6710.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because that was my parents' house number.
That's so sentimental.
Yeah.
I love that.
So 6710 as a whole is about, it's sort of me kind of looking back at my life in those early years growing up. And sort of reflecting on what I've learned so far in 28 years. I mean, I have a long way to go in terms of growth. And, you know, you never stop learning. I mean, the people that do, they're missing out, because life is a giant lesson, right? You're mm-hmm. supposed to go through it and see what you can take from it, right? Everything's there for you. And I think this album is just a representation of sort of the first quarter, I'd say, or third, I guess. I don't know if I make it to 90. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, so it's kind of a reflection of my youth, in a way.
That's really lovely. Is there, like, a specific, is it just general life? Are there any themes about having grown up with a disability? Or is it
just,
like,
so Red, life? Red, the song that we're going to play today that is out tomorrow, that's my sort of ode to disability, being a crip, all of that good stuff. I think, like, you know, I could tell you, do you want me to tell you what the song's about? I think that was one of your...
I think we'll talk about the song later, but I want to talk about using the word crip.
Yeah.
If I'm okay to say it.
You can say it. You're okay. I'll give you a day pass.
A day pass. No, but yeah, tell me about it. Because we've talked on this show a little bit about accessibility in language and certain slurs that have been used. And some people are like, yeah, these ones are okay for reclamations purposes. But that's what we haven't talked about, and I'd like you to share your story with it.
Sure. So, I mean, it's pretty simple. I have been called that derogatorily several, I can't even count how many times, mostly by people who are older, actually, which surprises a lot of people. Like, full-grown adults use that word and it felt like an attack. And I always felt so small when I heard it. Mm-hmm. And I just got to the point where I was done with that, because it's just a word. It has no power unless you give it that. Mm-hmm. So, similar to the LGBTQ plus community, used to use the word reclaiming the word queer, I thought, well, why can't we do that? Mm-hmm. Why can't I call myself a crip? Because I am. Like, I'm very, I don't, you know, it's such a personal thing, but I'm speaking about my own lived experience, so I think it's okay. I don't agree with all of this strange language that's coming out now, you know, person with a disability or what's that, differently abled? That one's hard for me to swallow, because I'm not differently abled. I'm at a disadvantage. I am disabled. What's different about the way I am is that I can do things less than other people. And I think there's this strange thing where, like, we're trying to cover up that it sucks by using these weird pseudo words to kind of make ourselves feel better about it. And I get that, because it does suck sometimes. But I've kind of learned that, as a writer even, words are my tools. I use words to communicate. I use words to express how I'm feeling. I use words to write songs. I use words to make a point. And so if I can't own the words that are being used to describe me, how can I learn how to accept myself for who I am? It's a huge part of acceptance. And, like, even my mom, and I love my mom to death, she's the best ever, but, you know, when I started saying crip, she'd be like, don't say that about yourself. And I love her for that, because in her ears, in her mind, she's seeing that as a derogatory thing, because she's heard me tell stories of people who have said that to me in a derogatory way. And I think part of being disabled, too, like, I spent now, even now as an adult, trying to protect my family and my loved ones from those kind of painful moments. Because really, if I go home and I'm ranting to them about somebody who called me a crip, what are they going to do? They're going to get upset. Yeah. They're gonna feel helpless, mm-hmm. right? Because they feel like they want to defend me, they want to help me, but they can't. This happened 3 hours ago, it's done, and now they're just sitting with the feelings that I'm just digesting. Mm-hmm. So I've just learned to kind of handle that part. And part of being an adult is handling the hard stuff. And that's sort of my chunk of hard stuff. And I use those words like crip and disabled as a way to make peace with CP and make peace with the way that I see myself. You know, I don't even realize I'm disabled unless I'm having a high pain day, sure. Like, the pain is there. The pain is irrelevant because I'm so used to that at this point. But when you're walking through a grocery store and you see that little camera and I see the way that I walk in, I'm, like, horrified. I'm like, who the heck is that? Because that's not me. That's not what I bring to the world. That's mm-hmm. not what I represent. Is that what people think of me when they see me walk into a room? And you have to sit with that and digest it, because it is a fact that that's the first thing people might see. And I need to combat that with my speech, with my words, with my actions, with my work ethic, with my beliefs, my goals, my dreams. I need to combat that image of myself that I don't identify with the way I choose to live my life. And if anybody has a problem with that, with me standing up and saying, I can say that I'm a crip, I can say that I'm disabled, I don't need that person in my life.
So what I'm hearing is, I'm hearing like a lot of different ideas here. Mm-hmm. And I do, I mean, as someone who doesn't have a visible disability, I don't feel like I have a lot to say in what language someone can use for themselves. I am all for using and reclaiming language mm-hmm. for anyone. So there's that. On the other hand, I have a question, which I'm trying to form in my head.
Don't overthink it. It's just a question.
I know, I'm just tired. It's the end of a long day.
Not going to storm out of here and walk off the air.
So I hear this very interesting perspective from you where you're like, I am disabled. I am someone with a disability, and that's, I'm a person who is disabled, and that is that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say that you see this image of yourself in this camera and you think, I have to combat it, what do you mean by that? Do you mean in the sense that you need to show the world that you are so much more than your disability? Or do you mean that you don't want to be seen just for your disability? Those are kind of the same thing.
No, there's two different parts to that. So the first part is that when somebody who doesn't know me mm-hmm. sees me walk into a room, for example, they're going to see the way I walk and they're going to run through in their head. They're either going to go, oh, I wonder what's wrong with her, mm-hmm. you know, and that's their first thought.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a first impression. Mm-hmm. It's like when you see somebody walk down a street that's like 12 out of 10, you're like, holy crap, she's beautiful. Right.
Retweet.
They might think that I'm also beautiful. I mean, you know, but that first initial, like, I wonder, it's a curiosity thing, right? I wonder what's up with that. The second piece to this is that there's connotations about people with disabilities that are just starting to change.
I see.
Where it's like, I do not want the way that I move to equate in their minds to my capabilities on this earth. Do you see what I mean?
I do, and I have a follow-up for that. So I take what you just said. I don't want the way I look and the way I walk to be equated with what people think of me at first glance.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier in part one of this interview, you said that sometimes in the film and work industry, it's this constant like toxic cycle of having to constantly like prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think those things conflate at any?
Oh, 100%. They are. And it's a social thing. It's like, look, everybody is constantly judging each other, No yeah. matter if you're disabled or not.
Yeah.
You look at somebody like, oh, that's, you know, that's, I wouldn't have worn that outfit today. We've all done it.
Yeah.
We all like to say that we don't, but we do, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, it, you catch yourself in your pity party moment because you're like, well, this is something I can't control. Yeah. And you get all Eeyore on yourself about it. But it's ultimately like, look, everybody's got their stuff. You have no idea what other people are going through. And I think in a work environment, it's a little bit different because, you know, I've had experiences where, you know, people assume I'm doing one job and it's, you know, usually a lesser job than what I'm actually doing. And I have to then go, no, I'm actually producing this shoot. And they go, oh, cool. And I'm like, yeah. And it's like, I don't know if it's because I'm young. I don't know if it's because I'm a woman. I don't know if it's because I'm disabled.
Yeah.
I don't really care.
Could be all three.
It could be a trifecta, triple points. Doesn't matter. The fact is I'm here and I'm working my butt off to build a life for myself beyond disability. And it's like, you know, I it's a weird thing. And I one thing I want to talk about, too, is the difference between inclusivity and tokenism.
That is a really tough line.
I don't think there is one, if I'm going to be honest with you.
That is too big to tackle today. I might have to bring you on another day for that.
But one thing I will say, one thing I will say is I've been approached a lot in my work life to be hired for disability-related stuff. And I'm always like, 100% I will do that. I will be the token person. Because here's the thing. Whether or not I'm a token doesn't negate the fact that I'm damn good at my job.
Yeah.
Right? So if me
if me
coming on as a disabled person helps your tax credits, helps your production, fantastic. It's a win-win because I get to do what I do and you get what you need. There is no, like, I personally am not offended by tokenism in the workforce.
That is so interesting.
It's an opportunity. But I do feel like at the same time, because everything is nuanced, right?
Yeah.
There's all these different grants for different, you know, things. Minorities. And it's just, and that can be a little bit exhausting because in my mind, it's like, is your project good? If so, great. You know, it shouldn't be a, yes, it's great that we have these grants for people of minorities of all kinds. But let's not make that override the quality of the work. Right?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, like you said, it's new. There's a balancing act.
It is a very nuanced. We might have to do a part two.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Because I do have thoughts on that, but it's not from a disability perspective. It's more so from a person of color perspective.
Yeah.
And like for me, sidetrack, tokenism has never been a problem with me.
No.
I do a lot of sports. I do a lot of very white dominated sports. I don't know why I keep finding myself in these situations. It just happens. And I've absolutely felt that, you know, I might just be on here because I'm a person of color. But at the same time, like, I am receiving an amazing opportunity, and also, like, it helps them, and also, like, it is getting other women of color into sport. So, like,
and you're having fun.
And, like, sure, maybe it is tokenism. It's a whole balance between the ends justify the means and, like, intent. And, like, that's a whole thing that maybe we can get into another day.
It's a good topic.
But, yeah, we're going to take an ad break again.
Wow, coming quick, eh?
Dude, it's, like, 6:34.
Holy, you want to go home?
No, we just have a time limit. We're on a time limit. This is a funny interview. I love this interview. We're going to take an ad break, but when we're back, we're going to talk about Red.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited to talk about Red.
That was a fun one.
Every Friday at noon, CITR takes you on a journey through Thunderbird Radio Land. A journey of sound and song, of words and music, of the now and then, of the right here and the far away. It's the Eclectic Lunch, every Friday at 12 noon on Thunderbird Radio, 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver.
In In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, and this is Nicole, and I'm here with Rachel Ransom. And this interview is not what I expected at all, but like in all the best ways.
I warned you.
But I'm a huge fan of it. I'm loving it. But to get back to the music stuff, so Red is a single that is coming out tomorrow, mm-hmm. but we're playing it for you today.
Premiere.
Because we are special.
Exclusive.
But it's part of your album 6710, which you mentioned is the house number of your parents' house growing up, and this album is a reflection of your youth, your journey.
Yeah.
And Red specifically is a song in homage to CP.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to know, what was the process of that?
I'm gonna be really honest. So the first line of the song, which you're gonna hear in a minute, so it's okay if I tell you.
Yeah, it's fine.
Is hit the ground hard again. She meant to hit it running. And that was true. I went for a run in my East Van neighborhood, and the streets and sidewalks are ridiculous because of tree roots. And I started running, and I hit the ground hard again. And I completely cut up my shins and my elbows, and I came back, and I was so angry. I couldn't even, because I was trying to get back into running after getting scoliosis. So I just decided, okay, time to write a song, because when I have big feelings, that's what I do. And I sat down at the piano and wrote Red in about 20 minutes, start to finish. So it is about the frustration of what happens when your mind wants to do one thing and your body wants to do another, and there's a disconnect. And it's also a little bit about sort of you trying to, you know, navigate the world as a crip.
Yeah, I mean, it's everyone's first time living this life,
mm-hmm.
and then you tack on all these extra complications of, you know, levels of marginalization, mm-hmm. being a woman, sometimes it's being a person of color, sometimes it's being non-binary, sometimes it's having a disability, so, like, navigating the world in itself is so difficult, and then there's this extra inexplicable layer of having a disability, which I probably will never understand your experience.
Hey, you're and that's you're in fine. The club.
So why the title Red?
Anger. Truly.
Yeah.
The Hulk has a great line. It says, I'm always angry. And I relate to that a lot. I spent 2 years pre-COVID boxing 5 times a week.
Jeez.
and that was kind of my way of dealing with that anger, yeah. the frustration. I'm just actually getting back into that too with some of my boxing friends were getting
good for
together.
You. And that is a cardio-intensive sport.
It is hard. It is hard, but it feels really good to get that out. And I think, you know, this song is about dealing with those hard emotions surrounding disability. Like, the anger builds, and if you don't let it out, that's when you have, like, the mental health where it's like, I'd say once every 2 months I have, like, a disability-related shutdown. And then I'm fine, but I'm getting better at, like,
yeah.
releasing and not being so stubborn and not asking for help. But, yeah, so, and I really like the groove on Red, and I think I want to give a quick shout-out to my two music producers, Brian Vino and Noah Stolte, because they really helped elevate that song with the, definitely the guitar and the drums, and just the overall vibe It's so groovy and it fits so well. If you heard the original, I don't know if you'd recognize the song. Because my
that's what happens in post.
That's it. My original recording was just piano chords and me singing it. So they really help. I think
sometimes it's more raw.
Yeah.
Maybe you could release a second version.
Yeah, we'll do, what did the Swiftie do? She did Taylor's version. We'll do Rachel's stripped down version.
Yeah.
Keep it stripped. But yeah, you know, when I play with just the piano, it's a different feel. But this, they really,
okay.
It's a bop.
Awesome. It's a okay. I'm so excited. So we're going to play Red.
Hit the ground hard again. She meant to hit it running. Her body and her mind don't speak. Dreamer in her still seeks. Where is her remedy? At the edge of insanity. Waiting, watching, promising herself the world.
Caught a chord of the next song.
Sneak peek. I know exactly what song that was too.
Oopsie daisies. You didn't hear that. Oops. So that was Red. That was really beautiful. I completely see the vision that your producers, your music producers, they had. But I do still think that like a piano version would be lovely.
Yeah, maybe we'll do an acoustic next.
Are you an alto?
Not a true alto, no.
Okay. A tralto. What are you?
Well, my fiance is a audio engineer, composer, all things music, and he says I'm mezzo soprano like everybody else.
Some range.
I don't. You'd be surprised. Like I'm not a belter. That I think that's where you're getting stuck, because a lot of especially female singers, they get into that like heavy rock belt, and I lean more jazz.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah.
Which is super fun.
It's fun. It's a good time.
Yeah, I've always just been a squeaky soprano. Like, no one wants to listen to me. I'm just, like, singing my arias up in space.
Well, we should play some of your songs.
Oh, no. I don't make music. I just sing old white German music.
Great.
But that was Red, and your album is coming out May 11th?
May 10th. May 10th. It's a Friday.
It's the day before Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Yes. And if you're willing, we'd love to debut it once it's on air.
Yes, please. At the station. That would be great.
Yeah. So you have such interesting insights, Rachel. This has been just such a fun episode.
It's thank you for having me.
It's not just about music. You have so many interesting takes on being a disabled person and disability.
Some of them are pretty spicy. But
some of them are spicy, but you know what? I think we need not be afraid of the spicy takes.
No, and if anybody gets offended, just remember that I was only speaking about my own lived experience, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I also think that we just all need to conduct these interviews and conversations in very respectful ways. And if you disagree, Rachel's not hurting anyone. Rachel's just talking about herself.
Just remember what we said earlier, right at the beginning. We're not all cookie cutters here.
We aren't all cookie cutters. I'd like to finish this episode with something quite lovely that Rachel mentioned about adaptation. Can you please repeat it for us?
The adaptability is the key to success. Was that one?
Yeah. I really, really like that. Adaptivity is the key to success. I really do think that